This is William and Lonsdale, a podcast about the legal ecosystem in Victoria and the fascinating people and stories that make it tick. For over 25 years, Joan Murphy has volunteered her time, one day every week, to Court Network, an organisation who supply our community with volunteers that stand beside, empower and instil confidence in all court users. She has seen a lot in her 25 years at Frankston Magistrates Court, and no 2 days are ever the same. As we will hear today, Joan finds the work incredibly dynamic and rewarding, but some days are harder than others, and she is careful to manage her mental well-being, which has no doubt contributed to her longevity.
I believe you have a habit of something you do every day when you're driving home from the court.
Yes, when I leave the court and I go up to the roundabout, I pull the window down and I say, out you go. And then I drive home and I'm fine.
So what's going out when you say out you go?
All the day. Whatever's happened during the day, out the window.
Out the window.
Yeah.
And go home with a fresh slate.
Yes.
Welcome to William and Lonsdale, Lives in the Law. Great to have you here today. Take us back to when you first were introduced to the legal world. You don't come from a legal family, and yet the laws played a significant part in your life from the time you were a child. How did it all start?
Well, my father was transferred to the Children's Court Clinic. He was the psychiatrist there. And during the school holidays, he asked me to go in and view some kids' court cases. So I can't remember how I felt at the time, but I went.
So how old were you at that time?
About 12. Uh-huh. And I was hooked. I thought it was great. I came away and I remember he would talk to me afterwards and said, how do you feel, about being in court? I remember that distinctly. And I said, I'd like to go again. So I did. Now, whether or not that was to keep me on the straight and narrow or whether or not he was hoping that down the track I'd study law, I don't know. But I was hooked.
And then I think your first job when you left school was in the legal world?
Yes. Well, it was in the legal department at the Tramways Board. Claims department it was called there. So I learned about running down matters and interrogatories and interviewing people who'd run into trams or been struck by a tram or cars blocking the trams or damaging the trams. So it was interesting work. But after a couple of years, I thought it's time to get into a legal office.
And you were fascinated, or you're always fascinated and interested by the criminal law system.
Always, yes.
And you found a job there.
So I went to see a man by the name of McClymont and he said, I've got the job for you. And I said, oh, who is that with? He said, Ray Dunn. He said, he's been looking for someone for 2 years. And I said, well, you think I can do the job? I've never, worked in criminal work before. And he said, I certainly think you can. And I went there and loved every minute of it.
And probably going back even maybe to the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, mm-hmm. Ray Dunn was a famous criminal lawyer in Melbourne.
Yes,
he was. Very high profile,
yes.
Very highly regarded.
Yes. Yes.
What did you do with Ray?
Well, I was actually, I guess, his law clerk assistant. He employed me on the basis that I would interview clients of his for all sorts of matters. He said to me, if you've got any reservations of any of the cases I give you, I'd like to know about it. So he would call me in and say, would you have any qualms about interviewing a rapist? And I said, no, Mr. Dunn. Or the next time was, would you have any qualms about interviewing an abortionist? Because that was a very big thing in Melbourne at that time. So I would actually sit down with each of these people and interview them and take a statement. And then Mr. Dunn would decide whether or not he would personally act for that person or whether or not he would pass it on to a barrister.
to a criminal barrister to go to court and do the case in court.
Yes, because a lot of the times, I mean, he was a very busy man.
So and that's at this time he was the president of the Richmond Football Club.
That's exactly right.
Which at the time were a highly successful football club. So he was a high profile and very busy person.
Yes. He wasn't impressed that I barracked for Hawthorne.
Now, by this time we've sort of taken you up to being, I guess, into your early 20s and you are getting married and having children. Mm-hmm. Did you then, the law dropped out of your life for a while?
Yes, it did, yes. I travelled a lot because my husband was always travelling on business and because he was travelling so much, I had to be at home with the boys. And that was the way it was in those days. Then when they finished school, I was listening to the ABC radio, which I never do normally. Peter must have had it on to listen to the cricket. I remember turning the radio on and I thought, oh, that's not my station. And then I heard this woman named Carmel Benjamin speaking about Court Network. And I thought, gosh, this sounds terrific. She was asking for volunteers to come and work in the courts. And I thought, this sounds very much what I'd like to do.
Can I just put a little bit in there about Court Network, just for people who haven't come across it before? Yes. Court Network, and please correct me, Joan, if I've got this wrong, it provides the community with volunteers who stand beside, empower and instill confidence in all court users.
Yes.
It provides support, information and referral to people attending court.
Yes.
And it advocates for the needs of all court users.
Exactly.
I mean, what a wonderful community organisation, which I suspect most of us know very little about.
Well, Court Network is an independent organisation. They have no affiliation whatsoever with the courts. But Carmel Benjamin actually was a volunteer at Dame Phyllis Frost, and that's where she recognised there was a need for people to be helped after, like, going through court, families that needed to be supported. And so she worked on that theory, and she knew a lot of people in the law and approached them, and they said, oh, it sounds like a good idea. And I think it took her over 12 months, 2 years to get it up and running. And what she did was she found that she started doing it herself, and she set up a table and chair outside the cells in the Paran
locker.
Court. Locker. She realised it was just too much of a heavy workload for herself. So she got friends, girlfriends to come in, help her. She said, I'll train you up and I'd like you to help me out and do this project, and it worked.
And now you've been doing it for the last 25 years.
Going on 26.
Going on 26, continuously.
When I first finished training, you were then mentored and I was sent to the coroner's court. So I was there for probably 6 to 8 weeks, and unfortunately at that time they didn't have a vacancy, because I would have loved to have stayed there. It was a very exciting time. It's when all the market gardens and the Italian mafia were at loggerheads, and that was an extremely...
Creating work for the coroner's court.
That's exactly right. I was then asked, because I didn't have a vacancy, it was full, I was asked if I'd like to go somewhere else, and I said, oh, County Supreme. Sorry, there's no vacancy there. All right, Melbourne.
Maybe for the non-lawyers among us, the County Court and the Supreme Court are the two higher courts in of Victoria.
That's right.
And the Magistrates Court is at the bottom rung of the legal process.
That's right. Anyway, I was offered a position with the brand new Magistrate Court at Frankston. And I sort of hesitated and thought, ooh. And then I thought, yes, I'll take it. So, of course, over the years I've been offered, if I'd wanted to, you can have a transfer if you've been at a court for a number of years. There's no way I wanted to leave, because I love Frankston. I love it. I love the people I work with. I love the lawyers. The police are terrific. It's great.
Frankston Magistrates Court is one of the busiest mag courts in Victoria. It sees up to 800 cases a week, with six courtrooms operating Monday to Friday. On any given day, there are people from all corners of our criminal justice system working and volunteering, including six judicial officers, 20 court staff, members of the local police prosecution unit, Victorian Legal Aid, corrections officers, security staff, protective services, and of course, court network volunteers.
So it's been the Frankston Magistrates Court and you've loved your time there. Mm-hmm. Is there such a thing as a typical day at court? And even if there's not a typical day, what does your day at Frankston Magistrates Court often look like?
You never know what you're going to walk into. And that's one of the beauties. I think most networkers in any court they're in would say the same thing. You just don't know what to expect. And in fact, that came up today in a meeting. That's part of its appeal, that it's not run-of-the-mill. It is all different. Like I could walk into the court and I've got to go to a meeting for domestic violence at 9 o'clock. That goes for about 10, 15 minutes. And then I might have a police come and approach and say, would you be able to go into the remote witness room? I have a young client, sexual assault matter. We need someone to be in with them whilst we go through the evidence. That's fine.
And in the remote witness room, that's for the victim of sexual assault to give their evidence.
Yes, in private.
In private, yes. So they're not stressed by
that. That's exactly right.
And you're there to assist that person.
I'm there to just sit and make sure that they're okay, that they can see the TV monitor, that the microphone is working, and just to bond with them before. I always ask for 15 minutes bonding time, and I don't ever ask any person that's in that remote room to tell me what the case is about. We don't discuss that. If it's a child, I'll discuss animals. If it's an adult, I'll choose. If it's a male, I'll say football or find out what their hobby is, and we talk about that so that we bond and then they feel confident that they can be in that room with me and I'm not pressuring them. If they get distressed, then I know that I have to interrupt their proceedings. Hasn't happened yet, but I'd interrupt and let the magistrate know that we need to have a break. We're not allowed to talk whilst the proceedings are on, so I could be in there for half an hour, I could be in there for hours, could be in there for a day. Just depends. So there's no real typical day, but on the other hand, I do a lot of domestic violence and quite often we'll have people coming back to the court for a second for a directions hearing and they'll come straight to our room. Our room is the safe room. Quite often we'll have people who are being harassed by the other party in domestic violence work and we might have referral from the police, might bring a stressed person in and say, can you look after this person? Or they'll self-refer. They've heard about us from friends or lawyers. Sometimes legal aid lawyer will bring us in a distressed client, say, can you keep an eye on them? So yesterday I had six women in my room and I had to find some chairs because there was nowhere for them to sit. It's interesting because I had one particularly distressed woman. And when they're really distressed, I'll sit quietly, like I'm sitting here with you now. We'll have the box of Kleenex tissues in front of you and I won't say anything, I'll just sit. I will say I'm Joan, then I just let them cry because all that yuck that's built up, I believe, needs to be released, right? So if they're really distressed, I will then get up. I don't encourage all the networkers to do this, I don't know, but I get up and I'll put my hand on the palm of my hand on their back and they're able to recover and they're able to talk. Now, the amazing thing about that is when you have a number of women in the room together, after a while they start talking to one another and after a while they start telling each other what's been happening in their lives. And quite often we've had women who've never been met in their lives before will exchange phone numbers so that they can give each other support when they're out of the court. And sometimes the domestic violence worker will come in and say, goodness, this is like a big party, you know, the women are laughing. These are the women that were crying earlier.
It sounds like a wonderful therapy session. And
It is, in itself.
Yes, my word.
It is. And it's fabulous for them, yeah.
Now, it's a highly emotional place, the courts mm-hmm. are, and particularly the magistrates' mm-hmm. court. How do you cope with it? How do you cope with the emotional, all of the emotional energy that's mm-hmm. in the room, and how do you avoid being exhausted by it yourself?
Well, I do go home tired, if all of us do. However, if I get emotionally involved, then I can't help the client. So it's their story, not mine. And I keep on top of that, that something's happened to them in their life, and I'm there to get them the best help that I can get, and or give them the best help. I'm not there to be judge. We're non-judgmental as humanly possible. I just like to be there as their friend, someone that they feel comfortable with, which I think is very important because, you know, sometimes they just feel they haven't got anyone in their life. And I think if they're opening up to me, I want to be able to give back. So I can't afford to get emotionally involved because otherwise I don't do a good job.
William and Lonsdale is brought to you by GreensList, one of the leading multidisciplinary barristers' lists in Australia. GreensList believe in promoting conversation around the ideas and issues that shape not only our legal system, but our wider community.
Now, you've said, Jane, that you strongly believe that this work should be voluntary and not paid work. What's brought you to that conclusion?
Oh, because it attracts the right people. If they were paid, I think it would absolutely ruin court network. I really strongly believe that you do court network because you really want to do this service. And if you're paid, I think you have it put a different slant on it. And I really believe that.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. Is there such a thing as a typical volunteer, Joan? I mean, if you... Who are the people who volunteer for Court Network and do this wonderful work?
Well, because it's volunteer, I think it's people who care. They care about human beings. They care about people being in trouble. So they want to help them get through the trauma that they're presently in court over. So they come from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sue and Gillian, Sarah, she's 25 years, and another Gillian, she's 25 years. So last year when we were honoured for being 25 years, the three of us were there together. There is a girl called Sandra who's been doing for 33 years. She's in the county court.
Mm-hmm.
So I admire that. Mm-hmm. That's real dedication, and I won't get to that. So she's doing well.
I'm picking up, Joan, that there's more women than men who volunteer.
Yes, yes.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Possibly more compassionate than men.
Yeah.
Empathetic, maybe.
Yes, maybe that, or maybe it's a bit too daunting for them. I'm not sure. But the men that we have done at Frankston, we've got two. One of them I mentored, David, and he's terrific. He's doing really well. My offsider, Peter, he's great. He, you know, we've got a great team down at Frankston. They're really caring. We all get on well, and it's great.
And you're there one day a week, every week of the year, sometimes yes. 2 days a week?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a huge commitment and a wonderful thing.
In recent years, pressure has been mounting on Court Network's resources, in large part due to the dramatic increase in domestic violence cases. On average, Australian police deal with 5,000 domestic violence matters every week, which breaks down to one case every 2 minutes.
The statistics say that there's a huge increase in that work coming before the court.
Oh, yes.
Anecdotally, is that what you see in the Frankston Magistrates Court? And from 25 years ago to now?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. It's It's out of all proportion. It really is. 25 years ago, there was domestic violence. There's always been domestic violence. I can remember that we were actually looking after both parties at the same time, and I'm quite gobsmacked when I think back that I could be talking to the applicant as well as the respondent.
So that the victim as well as the accused or the violent person.
But, and I can remember once I picked up on a respondent once, and he was a bit upset, and he said, why don't you go and talk to my wife? And I thought, yes, okay, in those days I did. Now, has it changed? Yes, we now have domestic violence workers. We have an applicant worker and we have a respondent worker. And it's the best thing that's ever happened. We've had so many cases of women being empowered, hearing other women talk about domestic violence, that they're now, they've got the courage to speak out and they're not going to put up with it anymore. Now, I think the police have made a big change. In the past, the police, you'd ring up the police to report an incident. What do you think we can do about it? You have to have more evidence than that. And now there's specialised police that deal with domestic violence. But 25 years ago, that wasn't so.
Would the majority of people that you see in court network, in your volunteering, be in a domestic violence situation?
Yes, yes.
Overwhelming majority?
Yes.
In some ways court network or the increase in domestic violence has possibly been a reason why a body like court network has come into existence.
Well, probably, although I did a lot more criminal work when I first joined court network, but I'm pleased to say that we're putting on more network workers. That frees one of us up to do criminal work because I have actually said to court network that I'm a bit concerned that the criminal side of things isn't getting the same attention as domestic violence, but that's because we're overwhelmed with domestic violence. But yesterday, I have to say, I was able to do some criminal work as well as domestic violence, and it was good.
Going back to your days as a young legal clerk with Ray Dunn.
Yeah.
Now, the training goes on. You had training when you started.
Yes.
By coincidence, you've been at a training session this morning.
Yes. We have three compulsory training sessions to do a year, and there's no getting around that. You have to do it, which I think the law's changed too, and we've got to keep up with changes, not that we're lawyers, and that is the cardinal sin if anyone ever gave legal advice. That is the first thing that a networker, and when I was mentoring, that was the first thing I made sure that everyone understood, that there was no legal advice to be given whatsoever, absolutely taboo. We're there to look after people, get them through their day in court, give them referrals to other services.
And therefore the training that you do, is it about knowing the services you can refer people to?
Yes.
Training in counselling skills of some variety and things of that nature?
Yes, yeah. Might be housing. It could be for counselling, all sorts of things that we can refer them on to.
You also did a lengthy course at one stage with the Victim Assistance or Victim Assist Network.
Yes.
How does that system work and how did it play out for you?
That was a very special... Court Network was given some funding, and I think part of that was from the barristers as well, Barristers Association. Does that sound right?
Victorian Bar,
Yes. So there was a woman employed by the name of Robin Jewell. She was a specialist trainer in grief counselling. She asked if there were any court networkers that would like to do this Victims Assist Network program. It was going to be approximately 9 weeks, one day a week, and if you graduated from that program, which was intense work, let me assure you, she would then tee you up with a person. It might be the family of a homicide case, or it might be a culpable driving matter. You are going to be liaised with a member of a deceased's family. So I was accepted to do the course. I think there were about 24 networkers that did it. And I can remember one of the first training sessions we had was a policewoman from the culpable...
Major accident squad
but it was called something else.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget this. She came in and she had a shoebox under her arm and she said, before I start this session, I just want to ask any of you, would you like to have a look at some photos of the deceased who have been killed in accidents before we start? And I think there was just this silence. No one got up, no one moved, no one looked at each other. We just sat there stunned, and then she started. Well, I think it was about 2 hours later, and it was the finish of the session, and we were intrigued, we were enthralled. And she said, right, well, I've finished now. She said, now, would anyone now like to have a look at the photos? And every single person, including myself, got up.
Now, what about in doing that course and yes. then following up with the course?
Yes.
Did you help some victims? Were you involved? Are there any cases you can tell us about?
Yes. Once you'd finished the course, if you were suitable, you were to meet up with someone, might be a person's been killed in a car accident, and you would be linked up with their family to go through, say, the coroner's court, and you'd look after the family. In my case, I was asked if I'd look after the mother of a boy who'd been murdered, and I was given her address to go to her home, because when her son was killed, she would not move out of her house. And so I remember being having a meeting in Court Network and told that when I'd go to her house, not to be shocked that there would be photos of her son, I'll call him John, in every room of the house. The house would be spotless because she spent her days since he died just cleaning and painting. You could eat off the floor. So I went and met up with her, and she provided morning tea, and we chatted. We got on really well. So I asked her if there was anything that she needed to know from the police, or the homicide squad, and she said no. They'll contact me, I'm sure, if anything's known. So I organised to see her the following week, and this went on for probably 4 weeks. I'd go once a week and we'd have morning tea. She still hadn't been out of the house. So I said, right, I'm not seeing you now for a fortnight. I made the decision. I thought, I've got to get her out of this pattern. So I said, I'll see you in a fortnight, and this time I'm taking you for morning tea. She was sort of a bit stunned by that. Anyway, I went and picked her up, and she came. And I took her down the beach. We went walking along the beach and I found a cafe and we went and had morning tea. And that became our place to go. And this was the start of her getting out of the house. In the meantime, if she had any questions, which sometimes she did, I'd ring the homicide squad and speak to Ron Idles. He was the lead detective. One of his underlings was, you know, he was the one I liaised with. I'd get the questions to him of what she wanted to know and get them back to her. Then the committal proceedings came up in the Magistrates Court, Melbourne. I accompanied her, and that's when I met up with the stepmother of this boy that had been murdered, ex-husband, and all the friends, and there were an aunt and uncle, and I think there were 19 people sitting in the court. And I can remember I'm sitting next to the mother. I noticed that the magistrate kept looking at me and then looking down the row of people. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? And I look again and he looks at me and he looks down. And I lean forward and I see that stepmother is about to lose it. And I thought, I've got to get her out of this court. So I would quickly say to my
Can
lady,
I just break in yes. there? Did the magistrate know you as a court networker?
Yes, because I wear a lanyard.
Oh, you had the lanyard yes, on, of yes, course, yes.
So I get this lady out, get up, and I say, we've got to get out of the court right now. And I just get her outside the door, close the door, but we're in the vestibule outside the court, and she absolutely shrieked and went hysterical. So the next day the next time we were back in the committal court, I remember that the detective came up to me and he said, look, it's going to be really rough today. We're going to go into the itty-bitty of what happened to her son. And he said, it's pretty gruesome. He said, you better ask her if she wants to be in the court or does she want to go out? No way was she not going to hear. So I thought, oh, boy. And I didn't know what had happened to him either. Well, it was absolutely gruesome. And she sat there and I thought, all I have to do is make sure she's okay, right? And she was. She just sat through it and it was dreadful. After that, of course, the person was sent for trial and that took probably 2 years. I went to the trial and sat with her. So the accused was sentenced to 18 years, granting parole 13 years. The shock came then that we found that he'd only been out for 2 years. He'd already committed another murder.
How terrible for the mother and the stepmother, I guess, to have lived through and experienced that. Mm. And that whole process, you were assisting the mother over a period of two years. Yeah, it's wonderful, wonderful. I mean, it's a sort of unheralded work that we don't know about in the community, but it's great that you're here talking to us today for us to learn more about what you do, Joan, and what Court Network does for us as a community. Among the people you've helped, Joan, over the years, are there any particularly which stick out and which you can tell us about?
The first one I'd mention is a fellow that used to come in and he'd have his bag packed with clothes and he'd have his hair all brill-creamed up and he'd come in and say, I'm back, love. Today's the day. And I'd say, what are we talking about? And he'd say, I'm off to jail today. So I just want to come and leave my luggage here so that when I'm sentenced, I'll know to come back and it'll be here. Would it be possible to have a cup of coffee now? And I'd say, yes, of course. He'd go into court and it'd be adjourned. So he'd go home. So that's that fellow. And that happened 3 times.
Okay. Did he finish up going to jail?
He did.
For a long time?
No, about 3 months. Uh-huh. Yeah. The other one was sad. I've made friends with him. He did not want any help from Court Network. What he did want was a cup of coffee. But he'd come in and say, how's your day going, love? And I'd say, oh, it's going really well, but I'm really busy. Yes, I'll make you your coffee. And this particular day, he came in a second time and I was busy and I sort of said, okay, I'll make you a cup of coffee. Then the third time, about 3 hours later, he came in and I said, I haven't got time, John, to do this now. I'm really busy, as you can see. And he said, okay, that's okay, love. And off he went. Well, 2 weeks later, I hear that his body's been found, he's been murdered. And I was really sad. I never knew what it was that he'd been killed for, but I can guess it was dealing with drugs.
Mm.
So I thought, I wish I had been more pleasant with that last cup of coffee.
Court Network services are delivered by over 450 highly trained volunteers. In 2018, Court Network assisted more than 190,000 people across Victoria and Queensland, including victims of crime, vulnerable witnesses and family members of homicide victims or deceased persons.
I mean, today I was with a number of different court networkers, so from different courts. They're absolutely, they're like me. We just love what we do. And that's, I mean, you couldn't do this job. It's not for the faint-hearted. and you couldn't do this job for as long as I have or whoever is doing it unless you really were dedicated to do it, because it is very challenging.
You're not disappointed you didn't do law and went and became a criminal law barrister?
No. What I'm doing now is exactly what I want to do. I mean, I admire the criminal barristers, okay? I think they're terrific. I'm fascinated watching them do it. No, what I'm doing, I love.
Yeah.
I don't have to take the responsibility of trying to get someone off. What I'm doing is actually speaking to people, and I'm humanising what is going on in the court for them. I'm hoping. Look, I get so many hugs, I can't tell you. You've got no idea. That, to me, is priceless. I just adore what I do.
Joan, thank you very much for your generosity in coming today and telling us your story, which is so, so interesting and inspiring to all of us. And I say thank you on behalf of all of us to Court Network. What a wonderful job that
it does. Yeah.
And yes. Carmel's inspiration all those years ago to inspire you and inspire countless other people.
Yes.
It's a great story.
Yeah, it is. I love it. I found my niche in life.
Thanks, Joan.
As always, show notes, useful links and a transcript of today's episode can be found at greenslist.com.au/podcast. This week, we linked to an article in The Monthly, written by iconic Australian writer and future guest on our show, Helen Garner. Titled The Court Networkers, Helen spent a week shadowing a volunteer and was awed by the empathy and strength she witnessed. We're keen to know what you think, so please reach out via all the usual channels. Let us know the questions you'd like us to ask, topics you'd like explored, or ideas for future guests. If you're enjoying Lives in the Law, please tell your networks and subscribe, rate and review the show. It really helps others find out about us. Our show is produced by me, Catherine Green, recorded and mixed by Alex McFarlane, who also wrote and performed all the music for the series. We acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation as the traditional custodians of this land and pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. There is no doubt that conversations about justice have been taking place on this land for thousands of years, and we are privileged to continue this discussion here today.